everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass. It's time for It's All About Food. And here we are. It's July 1st, 2014. Wow. I'm saying wow because here in New York City, we just got through a beautiful month of June, and every day was an incredible surprise for me because I don't think there was any humidity this month, or not much of it. And my memory of June is a hot, painful one. And it's just been delicious. Do you not agree with me? Back in 2002 to 2006, I organized every summer in June a vegan festival. It was a big one. It was on the campus of Lincoln Center. It was called Taste of Health. Maybe some of you remember it. It was a wonderful event, but every time we had it, it was hot. And so many people complained about the heat and the humidity. I picked June back then because it was available, but also I wanted to have less of the risk of rain. And it never did rain for those events. But just thinking back on those hot, humid days and just getting through this delicious month of June, I am so grateful. And how do we continue to have wonderful weather like this? Well, let's see what July will bring. We'll talk a little bit more about that later. Now I want to talk more about food, my favorite subject, with my guest today, Charles Horn. He's the author of Meat Logic, Why Do We Eat Animals? He's an Emmy-nominated writer and producer with credits including Forget About It, Robot Chicken, and Robot Chicken Star Wars. He has a Ph.D. in electrical engineering from Princeton University and holds 5 degrees in engineering and mathematics. Charles, how are you doing today?
Good. How are you?
Good. So we're going to talk about your book and whatever else we feel like talking about in the next half hour or so. And you have 5 degrees in engineering and mathematics. I'm sure you're a logical guy.
Well, I try to be.
And is that was that some of what inspired you in writing Meat Logic, because your mind thinks the way it does, or has been trained to think the way it does?
Well, I mean, I guess that's the case. I mean, how it sort of started was I was just watching a lot of people who argue on Facebook.
You know? Oh, gosh, there's a lot of violence on Facebook,
yeah.
Isn't there?
And they would just, like, have the same kinds of arguments, and it would just repeat over and over again and kind of end in the same ways. And I was just, like, thinking, well, why isn't there a place where this is all, you know, why isn't this done already? Why isn't there a place where you can just go and just once and for all kind of have this? And so that's sort of how I got the idea for the book. It started off actually to be something completely different because I have a background now in comedy as well. And originally I was going to make it a comedic book.
Mm-hmm.
And I started actually kind of doing that, and where I would, like, be answering the same types of questions, but I'd be doing it in a comedic way.
Yeah.
And it became clear pretty quick that while it could be funny, it really wouldn't be effective, because the reader would take this as an attack. And I was, like, writing for the wrong audience if I were to do it completely comedically. So it became clear that I actually couldn't do the comedic approach. I sort of had to just go a more straightforward, logical approach, because people are just so we've been trained to think a certain way based on our society for, you know, thousands of years. And so we're at this level where we can't even think properly on the subject.
Yep. We can't think properly. That's a good one. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's sort of what it became about. it became sort of like not just, you know, hey, you're wrong kind of thing, but just, hey, let's think about this for a second. Let's not even, you know, tackle your question itself, but let's tackle how you're thinking about the problem. And so, you know, maybe I can illustrate that here's a way of looking at it that's different, and here's a way that you can look at it in comparison to other situations where you already know how to think better.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think this book is really helpful for people who are already there that are vegan and need to have some good comeback arguments when they're posed with these things that we hear over and over and over and over, just as a starting point. Because often, I mean, we hear these, all of the things that you brought up in the book, and we'll probably go over some of them. We hear them over and over, and sometimes we don't have the right response.
Yeah.
Or we don't know what the right response is. Or sometimes, even though we've heard some of these things over and over, it still hits us. We're dumbfounded when we hear it. Like, really? Really? It just reminds me, I was at a book signing event maybe a month ago at Moo Shoes, which is a vegan shoe store in Manhattan. And the owners of that shoe store, they're two lovely sisters, and they are very generous with their space, and there's a lot of book signing and other vegan events there. And I was there. It was for Gene Stone's newest book that he co-authored called Awareness, I think it's called.
Uh-huh.
And I just walked in, and I'm, like, scoping out who I know and checking out the free samples of vegan food. And I overheard this guy say, "Oh, really? Where do you get your protein?" And I thought, that guy's got to be kidding, right? We're at a vegan event. Mostly everybody's vegan. And so I looked at him because I had just passed him, and I said, "You're not serious, right?" It turns out he was. He was a friend of the author. He was not vegetarian, and he was sincerely asking, "Where do you get your protein?" You didn't talk about that in your book, fortunately. That's like such an overdone question. But, you know, we never know where the questions are going to be asked and what they're going to be, and it's always good to have the answers. So thank you for providing some very logical responses.
Well, thank you for saying that. Yeah, no, I actually, you're right. The protein question was something that I sort of, you know, the one type of response would be to actually give them the information of, hey, here's all the different plant-based sources of getting your protein. But I sort of wanted to take a broader step than that. So, like, you know, I'll point you to a book that has more info about vegan nutrition and, you know, nutrition, period. But I wanted to talk about, like, a broader issue of, you know, a lot of people aren't ready to even believe things. So
mm-hmm.
we could say, hey, here's where you get your protein, and think that we're done with the question. But we're actually not, because there's still a block on their end where they're not believing, you know, us in any way. So I kind of wanted to tackle those questions, those hypothetical questions of, well, you know, what if it were true that we actually needed to eat animals? How would it change how we would go about things? And so by tackling that type of broader question, I kind of wanted to show them that, in a sense, even if you were hypothetically right, you're still thinking about it in the wrong way. And so I want to get them thinking that, you know what, it's not a vegan versus status quo. You have no status quo. There's no, you know, it doesn't exist. So whatever you're going to think, you have to think different at this point. So, you know, I kind of wanted to address those things.
In a number of chapters, you end with a summary and use the abusive boyfriend as a comparison. Can you give some examples of that, or why you decided to use that guy?
Yeah.
You know, there are some abusive girlfriends out there too, but
there are, yes, but it's more well known. And
there are more abusive boyfriends out there than girlfriends.
Yeah, I kind of wanted to point out that some of these things that people say, if you actually analyze them and you really, you know, take them apart, you can see how, like, the person is basically saying, I'm only hurting you because I love you so much. And it's like, you know, think about that for a second. This is exactly, you know, that's the abusive boyfriend situation, you know. So I kind of wanted people to see that this is what you're saying.
Yeah, it's still hard. It's still hard for them to see that.
Yeah.
Very hard. Which is why we need so many books and so many more restaurants and so many more cookbooks. And people need to hear this information and have it be front and center in front it all the time. And it's improving, but they need to be bombarded with this information from so many different angles.
Yes, that's absolutely true. Most of the time, people don't really have to even think about it. So, because it's the social norm, so it's kind of tough for us vegans to, you know, we want to force them to think about it, but then that puts us in the situation of being, you know, thought of as the aggressor, and so it's a tough situation where they take life around them as normal. You know, but then are never forced to think about this.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because I wanted to talk about the image that many of us have of being preachy. You talked a little bit about it in the book. It's hard not to sound preachy. It's hard not to sound smug.
Yeah.
Even if you're presenting logic that seems so obvious, it still sounds to those who don't agree that we're the high and mighty.
Yeah, that's very true. I tried very hard in the book to not be that, you know, that type. Like, I would constantly rewrite it if I ever felt it was, you know, going mm-hmm. in that direction. But yeah, if we're, it's just a natural thing that basically we're going to be in that situation because they willfully don't want to think about this. The only way to change is forcing them to think about this. And so you're in a dilemma. And it's basically the same thing that other social justice issues went through in the past where people didn't like them, but now we consider them normal and heroes. You
right.
know,
for... George Washington was a terrorist.
Yeah.
To the Brits back
exactly.
then.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, hindsight. To know what people will think of us in 50 or 100 or even 20 years.
Yeah.
I look forward to that. But
yes.
I don't know that I'll know. So I've been doing this for a long time. I don't know about you. And I started as a teenager, and I was a bit abrasive in my younger days. I worked as an engineer for 20 years in the semiconductor industry, and any opportunity I could, I was preaching about the power of vegetables. I was never shy. And I've since learned that the softer, more loving, compassionate approach works better. And I tend not to preach, especially when I'm eating with people, but I found I don't bring it up. I've made like a personal thing with myself. I don't bring it up, but everybody knows who knows me, what I'm about. They all feel like guilty or something when we're eating together, and they bring it up. They bring up a question. I was having a lunch with some people the other day, and one of them said, I don't understand what's wrong with eating eggs. You know, if a chicken just leaves it, what's wrong with eating it? And it just started a whole conversation. And I'm open when people want to ask the question. But what I find is a lot of people that are eating animals are either subconsciously or consciously are uncomfortable with it, and they have to talk about it.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, and I think you're right in saying that just the fact that we kind of exist is already something that makes them, you know, feel awkward. And I think, you know, a lot of people find when they actually go vegan is, you know, that it's important to find other vegans because a lot of people just can't deal with it, you know, who
yeah.
aren't vegan. And
yeah.
and you need that those other people. Like, I'm sure you've had, you must have friends or, you know, that stopped inviting you to things.
Yeah.
Because, you know, things like that. You know, it's, you know, as if you're going to go to their home and be like, you know, pointing fingers and, you know. It's funny, but there's that sense of just already it's an awkward situation.
Well, I think the bigger part of that is that most people, at least the people that I know who are very busy and usually a two-person adult family, they both work, they don't know how to prepare food, any kind of food, and they're used to eating out or bringing in. And my partner Gary and I, we're both big into cooking our own food. We post a lot of recipes at my nonprofit website, responsibleeateatingandliving.com. People are intimidated with us, vegan or not. We know how to make food. So many people don't, which is why when they know people that are vegan, they don't even know what's in their food to know what to eliminate.
Yeah, that's true too. I mean, I'm actually not in the same case as you. I'm a guy who doesn't know how to cook very
yeah,
well, you know.
Well, most people are like that today.
Yeah, exactly. So,
so tell me, where do you go to eat and what do you eat?
Well, I'm lucky that I live in Los Angeles and there's a, you know, burgeoning number of restaurants and it's wonderful. I actually, I was a longtime vegetarian and only 2 years ago I finally went vegan. And I find that my palate has expanded enormously.
Isn't that that's just amazing, and I laugh every time I hear it.
Yeah.
It's so true.
Well, because it's like we put ourselves in these boxes, and by finally making a change, you kind of take that opportunity of saying, well, now I'm giving myself permission to try all these new things.
Mm.
And, you know, I just would rule those things out before, but now it's like, hey, you know, this is great. I'll just try these things.
When you don't have the crutch of grating salty, fatty cheese on everything, all of a sudden your taste buds get clean, and then you're open to new flavors.
Yeah.
Now, you talk a little bit about the excuses that people give to themselves, whether they're vegetarian or flexitarian. What were you telling yourself when you were vegetarian?
Well, basically, a lot of it is, I think, similar to a lot of vegetarians who are ethical vegetarians. They don't know better. Like, here's somebody like me who has 5 degrees, has got a PhD from Princeton. I did not know that you have to make a cow pregnant to get milk. I mean, that's embarrassing.
But, you know, I remember watching Sesame Street as a kid. I was actually about 9 or 10, and I was watching with my baby brother. But I still enjoyed it at that age. And they said, I'll never forget this, but there were these beautiful images of cows. And it said, a cow makes much too much milk for her young calf to drink. I'll never forget those words, exactly those words. And we were taught that milk is extra, and it's for us.
Yeah, cows give milk.
Mm-hmm.
Not that we take it. Cows give milk.
All right, so how did you discover that cows needed to become pregnant and make calves to make milk and all the things that are associated with that aren't so nice?
You know, I don't remember the exact moments. I mean, I know that basically as a vegetarian, I basically knew that I want no part of this, but I didn't want to think about it any further because I felt that I can't win this fight. So I don't want to think about this every day. I want out, but you know, I don't want to think about it anymore. So that's sort of how I was for many years. And then I guess more recently I've been feeling that, you know what, things are starting to move, and I kind of want to be a part of that. I want to push it in the right direction, however little I can.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I was more open to you know, learning more and you know, looking for how to replace the remaining few things that were vegetarian in my diet.
And where are your friends and colleagues on this? Are they bummed out that you're becoming more of a drag, or are they happy?
I definitely have lost some Facebook friends.
Facebook too.
And you know, I sort of, I guess, part of me just thinks that it's necessary. Like, if that's what's going to happen, it's going to happen. And but it's more important for me to speak the truth. And I kind of think that we are getting closer and closer, you know, to a point where more and more people are being open to hearing it. So
yeah.
I think that that's more important to me at this point. So whatever consequences there are, you know, that's still worth it. And I'm also looking now for ways to turn it into a positive in other ways, you know, for both, you know, both for myself as well. Like, for example, I, you know, have been writing comedy. Well, hey, maybe I could find a way to be doing some, you know, some entertainment.
Absolutely. I think it's really important to do that. I was going to say, when you were originally talking in the beginning, how you decided to make your book serious rather than comedic, there's a place for the comedy, too. We need it. We need a message everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's sort of two kind of things I want to do. And I mean, obviously, it's something that would take funding and all that, so I haven't.
Oh, that.
So I haven't fully figured it out. But there's like, I'd love to, on the one hand, do, you know, one of those Stephen Colbert type shows,
mm-hmm.
where you're just kind of showing the insanity by just treating it.
Yes, we need that. And we've been toying with that idea, too, at my nonprofit, Responsible Eating and Living. So we need more of that. We need it, period. Yes.
And then the other thing I wanted to do is, you know, I write a lot of sitcoms as well. And I kind of want to do just like the comparison to The Cosby Show, where I just want that family that's normal, but they're vegan.
Oh, and it's just, love it. Yes.
So,
right.
Yeah, I want to do that as well.
You know, we've. For me, it's a big picture. I'm against racism, homophobism, speciesism, all those isms, whatever. I want to eliminate pain and suffering, and let's get away from exploitation. Big picture, everything applies. But unfortunately, history has shown us that we take very baby steps, and we're not even there. In places where we think we've gotten far, like with women's rights or with civil rights, we still have slaves around the world and in this country, although it may not be that apparent to people, or semi-slaves. People recognize it's horrible, but these things still exist. So we move slowly in improving women's rights and people of color and wherever we can minimize exploitation, and animals seem to be last because they don't have a voice.
Yeah, and that's true, but there is one important difference, and we're kind of seeing it as we speak in terms of the LGBT, is that like, we can see in our lifetime how even though they're not fully there yet, it's turning the corner where it's not going to go back. Like, you do get that sense that,
yes,
okay,
absolutely,
we have turned that corner.
It's inevitable. Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's frustrating, but inevitable.
Yeah. but
and
for animals.
And television and the sitcoms have helped that.
That's true.
That's why we need you to write one.
I have one. It needs funding.
Oh, funding. I'm so tired of that. We've created so much from nothing just because of funding is just so hard.
I know.
Yeah. All right. A few more minutes. So tell me about some of these things in your bio, robot chicken. What's
yes.
Robot Chicken about? Is there any good veg messages in there, or is it just a nice, funny story?
No, it's like these other projects are like I'm one writer on a team of writers, so
mm-hmm.
I'm not in charge of these. Robot Chicken, Seth Green is one of the people behind it. It's basically a stop motion animation sketch comedy show. So they take like little puppets and they move them frame by
mm-hmm.
frame.
Love that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they just make pop culture jokes and all that. So it has a really strong cult following. You know, it's on Adult Swim at night. It's for adults.
Okay.
So that's a lot of fun. But no, unfortunately the other you know, most of the writers are not. Are not there yet. So
right. I remember hearing, I may get this wrong, but something about the movie Finding Nemo was like the most popular video or the most watched something or other. And I was surprised to hear that it was as popular as it was, especially because whether people realize it or not, there was that subliminal or not so subliminal vegan message with the sharks trying not to eat other fish.
Yeah. Yeah, there are. There. I think we're seeing. I remember hearing a story about they changed the script in where they were going to end it at SeaWorld, and they actually changed a script where they took that out because they realized that where we're going long term, SeaWorld just won't stand up to history.
Right, SeaWorld is. Not very nice these days, or any of those days, but they're getting a very bad animal treatment reputation.
Yeah.
Yeah, because fish have feelings, too, and sea mammals have feelings, too.
I know. There's still a lot of misinformation out there. There's still a lot of work to do, but, you know, more and more people are like, getting to that point where they know something's wrong, and they realize, you know, society should. It's time. It's time. So.
Right. Okay. We're pretty much at the end. I just wanted to run through the table of contents of your book, just to whet people's appetite about what they can find in your book, in terms of the information that they need when people are going to hit them with some of the responses that you talk about. So we've got. Bias and misconceptions, the philosophical basis for animal rights, a few problems with arguments for speciesism, animals are just things, animals don't feel pain, animals are dumb, animals aren't human, humans are omnivores, like we're supposed to be eating flesh. There's some good ones here. We've been eating meat since the beginning of time. You talk about the paleo diet, which is so amusing to me, all of the excuses for paleo. And it's not a good diet, hello. The only thing good about the paleo diet is it gets people away from eating processed and junk food.
Right.
Period. But the rest of it, forget about it. bacon is one of your chapters. The role of the farm animals is to be eaten. Death at slaughterhouse is better than death in the wild. Who thinks of these things? A lot of people do. I was brought up eating animals. It's tradition. I certainly know that one. And the animal is already dead, and oh, God gave us the right to eat animals, please. Yeah, so very good. You hit them all pretty much, and thank you for writing it.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right, Charles, thank you for joining me on It's All About Food.
Thank you very much.
I'm glad to meet you.
You too.
Okay, have a good day.
You too. Bye.
You're welcome. That was fun. Meet Logic. Why do we eat animals? And if you are eating animals, maybe you could give me your logic as to why you are, because I'd like to hear about it. We can have a nice conversation, because the only way we're going to move forward is to communicate and communicate with each other. You may remember I recently spoke to 250 cattle ranchers about climate change in Nevada, and it was so powerful because here were two groups of people. Well, me, the lone vegan, one person, and 250 other people. But we were going back and forth and sharing our thoughts and ideas, and it's the only way we're going to move forward is when we talk and communicate and stay open.